Our next case is Godin versus the Minnesota High School League, A21-0014. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, respondent will have 15 minutes for their argument, and then finally the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. This matter is being recorded, so I must remind all the parties, as well as any visitors or guests, that pursuant to Minnesota court rules, you are prohibited from making your own recordings, either video or audio. So with that, counsel for the appellant, if you can start by just beginning and telling us your full name in a loud, clear voice, please.
Thank you, Judge. Kevin Beck, B-E-C-K, on behalf of the appellant, the Minnesota State High School League. Good morning, Your Honors. We're here today on a grant of a temporary restraining order on a disability discrimination or failure to accommodate claim under the Minnesota Human Rights Act. The district court abuses its discretion when it grants a temporary injunction based on erroneous factual findings or a misapplication of the law. An abuse of discretion occurs when the grounds for issuing the injunction are not supported by the evidence in the record. Both of these are present here. The district court issued an injunction that changed the status quo, that prohibited the high school league from applying its semester restriction bylaw 110. The undisputed evidence in the record before the district court shows that the respondent received equal opportunity to participate in high school athletics as a student without a disability. The district court abused its discretion when it found that respondent had even a neutral likelihood of success on the merits of his disability claim, because as a matter of law, and based on the facts in the record, there is no likelihood of success. Accordingly, the appellant respectfully requests this court reverse the district court's order granting the TRO. Minnesota State High School League Bylaw 110 provides that students have the opportunity to participate in 12 consecutive.
So, I just want to start you off in a particular direction because it's something that concerns the court. So as I understand it, you just summarized it. The injunction that was entered by the district court is specific to Mr. Godin, and it prohibits enforcement of Rule 110 as to him.
Correct.
As I also understand it, but I could be wrong, the student is on his way toward ending his participation in league activities and toward graduation. So here's the question we have for you. Is this case going to become moot, either as of the time that Mr. Godin ends his activities under the league's authority, or supervision, however you want to describe that, or as of the time that he graduates? And I realize that's not an issue that was briefed by either party, so I'm not trying to give you some kind of a pop quiz, but to the extent you've already thought about that, we would like to hear from you. And then, of course, I just want to explain that this is the sort of thing that we often do seek supplemental briefing on, unless you persuade us that, boy, we just don't need it. So go ahead.
You're correct, Your Honor. It is specific to the respondent. And as of now, it's my understanding he is still participating. We do not seek a stay. He's still in school. So your question of when he graduates, would it become moot? It would with respect to this particular respondent. However, I would assert that this issue is capable of repetition, but would evade review if the court does not make a decision. While the TRO is specific to respondent, it would, with respect to the Minnesota State High School League as a party to it, and with respect to other students, similarly situated students throughout the state of Minnesota, would certainly be a cause for them to file a TRO or a motion for a temporary restraining order long after respondent in this case graduates. The facts of this case are effectively that there's no allegation, for example, that respondent missed any time in school.
I don't mean to cut you off too much on the merits of your argument, and I do have a couple questions for you along those lines, but I just want to make sure that I do understand your thinking on, at least preliminarily, on mootness. So you do agree that as to this particular student, effectively the injunction expires, right? No later than when he graduates? Because it has no more impact on the league, as it would, right?
Yeah. I would just caveat that, and I don't know this off the top of my head, and it's not part of the record. I would concede that it would be at the end of the sports season, given the COVID the spring sports might extend past graduation this year. But yes, to your point, when sports are concluded, and this injunction would expire as it relates to this particular respondent.
And to the extent you think this is a general issue that's capable of repetition but would evade review, I guess I'm a little confused. I didn't see in the record any reference by the league to expedite this appeal, because, of course, that could have happened. Can't happen now, but I mean, I'm just surprised. If you think it's such an important issue, why didn't we see that motion?
We didn't seek specific expedited review, but because it happened quickly. I mean, the case was decided in late December, I believe, and we're here at arguments in April. We had transcripts completed and submitted in January. So everything went fairly quickly. So our thinking was we would have arguments and a decision, potentially depending on how long the decision-making process takes, prior to the end of the sports season.
Okay. Do you know when the end of the sports season is?
I'm sorry, Judge, I do not.
Is he in track now? Is that right? Or?
That is my understanding.
And you don't know when the track season ends. I mean, we're in a position where we may be deciding an issue that's moot. And
if I could address that,
usually aren't in the business of giving advisory opinions.
And I would assert, Your Honor, it's not an advisory opinion, because whatever decision is made in this case will have a binding impact on the Minnesota State High School League, regardless of when it's made, even if it's after respondent has completed his educational system. It'd be difficult, if not impossible, for the high school league to disregard and ignore the court's finding on a TRO of a neutral likelihood of success in the merits, given the facts of this case. And those facts being that the student in this case missed no time.
So you're telling me that, I mean, just to sort of, so let's say for the sake of argument, we reverse the decision, and then Mr. Page, being a very good lawyer, decides to appeal it. You're telling me that no one on that appeal would say we've possibly issued an order that was on a case that was moot? No one's going to do that? Or the other way? You know, what if we, what if we ruled the other way, and then you appealed? You're going to tell me that, you know, when this rolls up to the Supreme Court, Mr. Page is not going to argue mootness? I mean, everyone's agreeing not to argue mootness. I think everyone's going to do what they're going to want to do in the best interest of their clients. So,
correct, Your Honor. My point being is that the decision would be based on the stature of this case. It's a purely legal issue, given the undisputed facts in the record, and that it's really a decision. It's a decision on a TRO, but it's applying the law as it relates to disability reasonable accommodation under the Minnesota Human Rights Act. And that is the decision that would govern moving forward. And I guess to answer on the flip side, however this lands, potential litigants are out there, potential students who will be impacted by the court's decision one way or the other, however it comes down. And if that decision is that the district court got it correct and granting an injunction in this particular case on these particular facts, that will be, I would assume, exhibit one in any complaint moving forward of a similarly situated student. And that this. And
counsel, I just want to emphasize, it's not that the practical effect of the district court's order escapes us. That's not it. You know, we are talking about the appellate court's jurisdiction, right? But I want to go to your underlying premise, which is that this is an issue that's capable of repetition but would evade review. Because what I didn't see in your briefs, could have missed it somewhere, is any position by the league that the sort of request that Mr. Godin made in this case, in other words, a request by a student that has not withdrawn from school or dropped out due to disability, that is a frequent request that the league receives for a waiver.
And it's not in the record, Your Honor. It kind of is. The judge asked at the district court level, and part of her decision was based on the fact that bylaw 110 waivers have been granted in the past. I'm trying to find the court's order.
I'm familiar with the comment she made in the final order, and she did determine that waivers had been given. But you know as well as I do that waiver provision is pretty narrow. I think the district court found it didn't even apply to Mr. Godin because he hadn't withdrawn from school or dropped out. That's what I'm asking is, do you get requests like Mr. Godin's request?
Yes, Your Honor.
And how many? And is that the sort of evidence you're going to put in front of us to tell us this is not a moot issue?
I would say at roughly 10 to 15 per year come in through bylaw 110. I would note that there was a very public bylaw 110 case 2 to 3 years ago. And after that, we saw an increase in the number of bylaw 110 appeals. And so.
But is any of this information you're giving us now in the record?
It is not, Judge. It is not. Not the numbers. The fact that these bylaw requests exist and have been granted or denied in other circumstances is a part of the record.
Mr. Bick, why don't you focus on your merits argument? I know we've taken a lot of your time, so we apologize for that, but
no,
you can see it concerns all of us.
Yeah, no, that is fine. I understand that. And I'll be brief. I know I've got 4 minutes left. Essentially, the undisputed facts show that respondent received equal opportunities to a non-disabled student. As soon as he entered seventh grade, he was given the opportunity to participate in high school athletics for six consecutive years, 12 consecutive semesters. And the evidence reflects that he availed himself of that opportunity and competed in high school athletics each and every one of those 6 years. There's no allegation or there's no district court finding, and there's no allegation that he was unable to participate at any point due to a disability or that he was missed school due to his disability. In that sense, the court, there's a majority view throughout the country on this issue of high school athletics.
Let me stop you there. So a majority view throughout the country on the ADA and the Rehabilitation Act. As you said at the very beginning, the student's claim here is under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, which
That's
is
correct.
Different, right? There are some very specific provisions about educational opportunities in the Minnesota Human Rights Act that are different. So I just to interpret a little bit of the district court's order, the district court called this a question of first impression for Minnesota. And I think on that respect, the district court was right. And I don't think you disagree with that. We don't have an MHRA case, right? To follow.
Correct, Your Honor. This is a case of first impression, but on page 10 and 11 of my initial brief, there's a handful of cases that stand for the proposition that Minnesota courts treat cases brought under the Human Rights Act identically to cases brought under the ADA.
Yeah, but there are totally different provisions, right, in the MHRA about, you know what I'm talking about educational opportunity.
I'm not
going to give you the citation, but I bet it's something you're familiar with. And it actually prohibits discrimination in any manner. So that's quite a bit different from the ADA. And at least, it's been commented on in opinions. So.
And there's no evidence of any discrimination on the basis of disability based on the facts in the record.
Well, let me ask you about that, because actually the district court found that Mr. Godin repeated the seventh grade because of his learning disability. So that the only reason that he is a senior and beyond 12 semesters is because of his disability. I didn't see you challenge that finding as clearly erroneous. And
I am not, Your Honor, but the difference being is that he repeated a grade due to his disability, but had no impact on his ability. The disability had no impact on his ability to participate in high school athletics. The reason he is ineligible is not because...
I don't think the question is whether the disability impacted his ability to participate. It's whether the disability led to him being a 13-semester senior. So that's, I think that's the issue. And you know, that's the way the case law has looked at it that has gone in the student's favor. I realize there are other cases that have gone your way, but those are under the ADA. So,
yeah, and I would argue, yeah. I'm sorry, Judge. I would argue that the ADA analysis is appropriate in this case, regardless of the specific provisions under the Human Rights Act regarding educational access, because the student has had the opportunity to have educational access at every step of the way. The inability to participate in high school athletics is not a total exclusion from the educational process under GOSS. And it's the case law in Minnesota, specific to Minnesota, and this is the kind of where the property right issue came up in the judge's order, even though the parties didn't argue it, but I briefed on it at the appellate court because I think it factored into the court's decision. But the legal standard is a total exclusion from the educational process, and there's no evidence that the respondent in this case has been excluded from the educational process based upon the high school's application of its bylaw 110. He's still able to attend class. He's able to participate in extracurricular activities outside of varsity or outside of athletic competition. And I see my time's up. If there's any more questions, I'm happy to answer them, but otherwise I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beck, and you will have time for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you may begin, please.
May it please the court, my name is Justin Page. I'm an attorney for Minn Minnesota Legal Aid and the Minnesota Disability Law Center. I represent respondent Declan Gaydon in this matter. And if I can first address the mootness issue that was raised. Mr. Gaydon is participating in track and field. I believe I looked it up the other day, the championship, the state championships, which I don't know that his team is going to make, but that ends in July or June 20th. After that point, depending upon when the court rules, in this case, if the court rules prior to that date, the issue will not be moot. If the court rules after June 20th, the issue will be moot. Mr. Gaydon is a senior, he's graduating, and he's off to college. He has about a month and a half left of school.
So let me follow up briefly, Mr. Page. You indicated the date that the state championship is on, and I understand your reasoning there. And I'm sure that Mr. Gaydon is on track for graduation, but of course, there's always the possibility he wouldn't graduate, right? I'm sure it's slight, but I'm just saying, you know, from our standpoint, this timing is very tight and relevant to our jurisdiction. That's our concern. So how are we to know when Mr. Gaydon graduates and then when he completes his league activities?
Well, I don't know that it matters for purposes of this injunction. Declan was seeking to be able to participate in 12 semesters of high school sports. League rules allow 12 full semesters in high school sports. The district court orders allows him to compete in 12 full semester sports. So even if he didn't graduate, I don't think he'd be allowed to play high school sports next year because he'd be playing his 13th semester of high school sports.
I did see that argument in your brief, Mr. Page. To me, that's quite different from this mootness issue that we're talking about here, because the injunction against the league is that it not enforce rule bylaw 110 against Mr. Gaydon. And the district court found that, you know, that Mr. Gaydon is excluded based on 110. She didn't accept your argument about this 11 semesters, 12 semesters. She followed the rules that the league has laid down, which they've said it's not about actual participation. It's about the sequential semesters and your ability, a student's ability to participate or opportunity to participate. So I guess I'm a little confused. Right. Why are you bringing up the 11 semester issue? I guess I don't understand, because right now the injunction is as to Mr. Gaydon, and it prohibits enforcement of rule bylaw 110. So if you didn't graduate, I guess right. I think maybe this would keep on being a live controversy.
Correct. Let me walk that back.
Okay.
I guess I could submit, after the high school, the track season ends, I'm more than willing to submit documentation of graduation. Because I think there's very small, slight chance that he won't graduate.
Well, let me just, say that is certainly something that would be relevant, if supplemental briefing occurs here for you to inform us, or it could be something that the court even specifically requests. I'll defer to the presiding judge on that. But you understand our concern, and that's all I wanted to be clear on. Thanks.
Correct. And with regards, the high school league, makes an argument, and it made an argument today with regards to the ADA. I don't even think the court has to get there. The court is right that this is a case under the Minnesota Human Rights Act. But even if it did look at the ADA cases, there's a split. There's no majority opinion. The cases go either way. And that's a decision, honestly, for the district court to make. The Minnesota Human Rights Act requires public accommodations, such as the league, to make accommodations. And in this case, we're asking for, let me back up. The two main issues in this case are balance of harms and likelihood of success. With regards to likelihood of success, a plaintiff does not need to show a high likelihood of success on the merits for a court to issue an injunction. Rather, if a plaintiff makes even a doubtful showing as to the likelihood of prevailing on the merits, a district court may consider issuing an injunction.
Can I ask you about this likelihood of success argument? Because that seems to be the main argument that the appellant is making here, that as a matter of law, they're going to win on this case because you're basically asking that your client be given more rights than any other person. And in other words, that you're asking for an excess of 12 semesters. In light of that, I mean, how do you respond to that? That this TRO was improperly given as a matter of law?
First, Declan is completing his 12th semester in high school sports. He's asking for equal opportunity to complete his 12th
semester. Well, is there an issue of... Is there an issue of fact or interpretation as to whether whether he is actually in his 13th semester as mm-hmm. opposed to his 12th semester? Because I know there was discussion as to whether just being given the opportunity was sufficient as opposed to, whether there was actual participation.
Right.
Is that an issue that makes this case unique, I guess?
Right. I don't think there is. After the injunction was lifted, Declan only ran track and field. The track and field season was canceled last year due to COVID. There's no question he would have been able to finish his track and field season. But because he's in school this year, he's able to participate in track and field.
All right. So you're saying this case is unique because of COVID. There was a cancellation, so he really didn't have an opportunity to participate, which makes his ability to participate this year unique to him. Am I correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. And even under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, accommodations, they are necessary, some may call them benefits, I would call them equal opportunities for students with disabilities. For example, a student with a learning disability in high school may get extra time on their test. That is, so if a test was granted, say there was an hour to get the to take the test, student with a disability might be granted an hour and a half, that extra time to create as an accommodation. Under the high school league analysis, the high school league would say, well, the students taking the test, all students are given an hour, so that's equal opportunity. The Minnesota Human Rights Act says no. Individuals with disabilities are given an extra benefit or equal opportunity when necessary, so they have equal opportunity to complete the season, the test, or the season, or their high school league sports career in this case. With regard to
Mr. Page, could you focus on, I found the Potkin Eighth Circuit decision, you know, somewhat persuasive. Could you distinguish it, apart from, I know it's ADA, and this is, as Judge Bradwell pointed out, a human rights case, but assuming that, you know, assuming that Mr. Beck is right and that, you know, they're sort of applied the same, why under Potkin do you not lose?
Well, the Potkin's a totally different case. It's an age case. So the individual in Potkin was, I'm not sure, 19 or 20. The rule said allowed for individuals to participate who are 18 or something. I don't remember quite all the facts. But this is not an age case. There's, you know, Declan.
I mean, isn't the reasoning the same? I mean, if there's an, you know, we don't want, you know, 20-year-olds playing in high school sports, and we don't want people who have more than, you know, 12 consecutive semesters playing either for the same reason. You know, we don't want, you know, ringers coming in because, you know, then it's unfair to everyone who's 18 and under. Or, yes. So what? I'm not sure I agree with you. So why am I wrong?
Well, first of all, Declan is 18 years old. He's not 20. He is just continuing to participate. He would have been able to participate. So the ADA, the Minnesota Human Rights Act, requires an individualized analysis. There's no allegation that he repeated seventh grade to try to game the system. There's no allegation that competitive equity with his track season, it has been, that it's changed because he's now being allowed to participate. So therefore, I think it is, they're two totally separate cases.
So, counsel, let me follow up quickly. You mentioned the individualized inquiry under the ADA, which, you know, that's quite a body of case law there. If I remember my sequence of cases correctly, and I might not, but I know you practice in this area, the Potkin case was decided before the U.S. Supreme Court directed that the ADA has an individualized inquiry. Isn't that right?
Correct. Potkin was decided before Casey Martin, which is the golf case. And Casey Martin was decided after that.
Because it seems to me that the federal cases that have gone the league's way, you know, have not been following Potkin's analysis. They have been doing this individualized inquiry that you were just talking about, looking at whether the student is in some way trying to game the system or get in through the back door will have an effect on the league's activities, which, of course, you know, obviously you and Mr. Beck respectfully disagree on that issue. But I just wanted to make sure I understood the case law right.
Yep, you're right. That's right. So, and I would just say, so there's, you know, there's no harm. The league has showed that it will not be, or has not shown harm in any way of this case, and hasn't alleged that Declan playing high school sports right now has harmed the league, or that the track season competitive balance have been shifted anyway.
And are you claiming, just so I'm clear, you're claiming that this is his 12th semester. Is that correct?
Correct, because he's only playing track and field, which he would have been able to finish last year had the track season ended. So, I mean, had COVID not hit, we might not even be here. But this is his 12th semester. Where there's no harm to the league, the harm to Declan is great.
So I want to follow up quickly on that piece about why Mr. Gayden missed his semester of track, his track activities last year. So was that raised as part of the reason for the exception request? Because you did have that request process, had several hearings in front of the league. Did you mention that he missed track in his junior year as a result of COVID shutdown?
I would have to, because it's
been I didn't see it, but like I said, I could have missed something in there.
I don't think we raised it in the district court, but I might have raised it at the high school league meeting last year. I just can't remember.
I know that the attorneys, you both discussed opportunity to participate versus actual participation. Was that in conjunction with any claim that this was his 12th semester?
Our argument is that he's entitled to 12 full semesters and that he should have equal opportunity. Reasonable accommodation is necessary to afford him an equal opportunity to compete in all 12 semesters. He's now competing in his 12th full semester. Does that answer your question?
Well, I just want to make sure I understand what was argued below. Okay. So this is what you did argue this. You made this argument below as well.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Because the argument of Mr. Beck is that he's actually wanting more than 12.
Right.
Because he had the opportunity to participate.
The league raised that issue below too, but we just disagree on that issue.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Page.
That I see my time has expired. Oh, Judge.
No. I was just about to point the exact same thing you just did. So thank you, Mr. Page.
The objection.
Mr. Beck, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you, Judge. To Judge Hooten's last point, the league's position is that the respondent is actually in his 14th semester now. And that's a simple math counting forward, starting with his initial entrance into the seventh grade. And I think that the questions or the argument related to missing.
Now, does that depend on whether wrestling is two semesters?
No, it does not. That just depends on I think we're at this point in April. There's no dispute that he would be in his second semester, regardless of the participation in wrestling. And so two semesters for each school year since he started seventh grade in 2014. Gets us to number 14 right now. And the COVID issue is an interesting one because it really highlights how a respondent is seeking an extra benefit not available to those without a disability. Students who did not have a disability last year and missed their spring sports season because of it being canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic do not get an additional season or additional semester or year to come back and participate. They don't get that. And whether it was raised.
So when you say they don't get that, you mean they certainly don't get it automatically, but would the waiver application or appeal process under bylaw 110, would it hear an argument on behalf of a cancellation of a sport? As a reason for an extra semester? I thought the comments had some indication that would at least be a consideration. I'm not, there's never a guarantee. I understand.
Yeah. No, not a cancellation across the board, but if the student missed a semester specific to that student for some reason, if they fell ill and we're missed a significant portion of the school year or the semester and we're unable to meaningfully participate, then that would be considered for a waiver to grant additional semesters and has been. And that,
what about cancellation of the season?
No, the league has been very clear that they will not be granting additional semesters of eligibility because of the cancellation of the spring season in 2020.
Well, and one reason I'm asking these questions, I'll be real honest with you, Mr. Beck, because, you know, in determining whether this issue is moot, I mean, we have kind of obviously it would be easier to say it isn't moot if we just said, well, this is a matter of law and the league should have won and this is likely to reoccur. But here we actually have a disagreement as to whether he had an opportunity to participate in light of COVID, at least for one semester, and whether he's actually in his 12th semester as opposed to his 13th or 14th semester, which makes it harder for us to say this is likely to reoccur, because God forbid if we have COVID interfering with our lives like it has in the future. So how would you respond to that in terms of whether this is moot or not?
I guess my response would be, Your Honor, that this COVID cancellation of the spring sports season affected everybody neutrally across the board. The entire sports season was canceled. It wasn't canceled because of his opportunity, respondent's opportunity, or lack thereof last spring was clearly not a result of his disability. It was a result of the season being canceled due to the pandemic and the peacetime emergency that was declared by Governor Walz. In terms of the mootness, this, given that the high school league is a de facto state agency for purposes of kind of court analysis, this is an important public issue of statewide significance as it moves forward, as the high school league moves forward and determines how to address similarly situated students and the 250,000 or so students that participate in high school sports in the state of Minnesota. The flexibility of the mootness doctrine would dictate a decision be made, regardless of its individual impact to the respondent in this case. A couple of quick things I just want to respond to in my last 30 seconds. The Metropolitan Sports Facility case that counsel cited for even a doubtful showing allows a court to consider a TRO is only applicable if you read the holding to grant a TRO that does not change the status quo. The TRO here changed the status quo. And then the last thing, the analogy of extra time on a test is not applicable here, because the extra time on the test is to put a student on equal footing. Here, the respondent had equal footing. He had 6 years, 12 semesters to participate, just like every other student in the state of Minnesota. I see my time is up. Thank you, Judge. Thank you, Mr. Page.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. Thank you, Mr. Page. The matter was well briefed and well argued. No surprise, the court has decided, because of the importance of the mootness issue, that we are going to be reissuing an order that will be requesting supplemental briefing on this issue. And also may require information dealing with when Mr. Page's client's participation ends and or when he graduates. We will be issuing an order to that effect either today or tomorrow. And the order will discuss exactly what we are asking you to address, but as you can imagine, it's going to be dealing with mootness. Sorry for the extra work, but that's the way it goes sometimes. We don't anticipate any further argument, just a supplemental briefing. And after that, the matter will be submitted. So we thank you for your time, and we appreciate all of your hard work and briefing on this issue. And Mr. Page, we all wish the best luck to your client in his track and field participations for this semester. But that's the last argument for our calendar this morning, so we are adjourned.
Thank you.